infamous. That's the word of a dictatorship party.
We have to leave it there, Ralph. We want to thank you so much for being with us, legendary consumer advocate, and Mark Green, political organizer and activist. I'm Amy Goodman. Stay safe.
When I first came to Brookhaven Town, way, hey, 90.1, there was no good music to be heard around. Way, hey, 90.1. Then one day I turned on the dial. Way, hey, 90.1. There I found music to make me smile. Way, hey, 90.1. I waited for a legal ID. Way, hey, 90.1. The DJ said WUSB. Way, hey, 90.1. They start each day with the rising sun. Way, hey, 90.1. Don't ever finish till after day is done. Way, hey, 90.1. So if you want good music to hear. Way, hey, 90.1. There's a station in Stony Brook you ought to hear. Way, hey, 90.1. So if you like the sounds, do take a look. Way, hey, 90.1. At WUSB Stony Brook. Hey, hey, hey,
hey. You know, that never gets old. Wow. It's WUSB Stony Brook. It's just about 6 o'clock. Time, once again, for another edition of Off the Wall.
Thank you.
Good evening, everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein over here, and Kyle's over there.
Hello, indeed.
Yeah, we can still do the left-right thing.
Yeah.
You want to go to the right?
Maybe.
Wait. I went to the right, but you're showing up. Are my headphones on backwards again?
All right, I don't want to do it if it's like this.
Well, hang on.
I do feel like I'm in the right most of the time here.
And I'm in the left.
All the way. Yeah, wow. That's very leftward.
That's the makings of a good political debate show, you know? One person on the left, one person on the right.
I feel like from over here, I can be understood. And with your opinions and platform, I can maybe listen and then show that I'm listening by speaking with my eyes and my whole body, because I'm there in the midst of the conversation with you.
I'm
going to
come over there and get you out of this, because this is a waste of time, I think. So
okay.
I'm going to move you back into the center. Is that all right?
Yeah, it felt like I was working a little
hard. We did a show where we debuted our stereo features about 50 years behind the rest of the country. But we did it, and then we went and we posted a version of it in our archives that was mono. So it didn't make any sense to anybody listening then. Fortunately, thanks to all kinds of technical prowess that we called upon, we were able to get a stereo version, and it's been replaced in our archives. So if you're one of the puzzled people that was listening to that show about a month or so ago,
we demonstrated the capability.
Yeah, and then we demonstrated our inability to post the right version. But it's all fixed now. Everything gets fixed in the end. That's the important thing. So, oops. Hopefully that will get fixed.
It was so stable. No,
I was motioning with my hand and I didn't see. So, are you ready?
Oh, of course. I am psyched. I can't afford popcorn, but yeah, I will be taking every breath I can while I get the lowdown on the showdown.
If you can't afford popcorn, you have to figure out how to blame the Democrats for that.
Oh, I have blame ready for everyone.
Democrats, amazing party, really. They are incredible, second to none, as far as always managing to get blamed for everything, no matter what, and never taking credit for things that they accomplish, because they do occasionally accomplish things.
No, but they take credit for getting blamed.
And that's my point, yes. And nobody comes close to them as far as that. So
right before they tell you kudos about what they did clean up and do right.
The latest, I think we should focus on one of these every week, but the latest is the abysmal performance of our students. Yes, we're talking to you, students. Make us ashamed. Terrible math scores. Awful math score. The worst math scores ever. I don't know how they measure them. I don't know what kind of test they gave you. But apparently 2 plus 2 doesn't equal 4 anymore in your world. That happened because all you all were at home learning on Zoom and through homeschooling.
I'd like to interject.
And because of the pandemic, excuse me, let me finish my point. And as we all know, all of that is the fault of the Democrats. The pandemic was the fault of the Democrats. Zoom is the fault of Democrats. The stupid kids, the
before
fault of the Democrats.
Before we waste any more time with this, I'd like to just interject.
I believe I still had time on the clock.
Before I refute...
God damn it all.
All three of the lies and mischaracterizations there, I would just like to point out that this clearly is an issue that has been a forefront of everyone's attention, but clearly it is not entirely the Democrats' fault.
Okay, I think that's Kyle's roundabout way of saying that I'm wrong.
Well, my stock answer number four will come in handy later, but I just thought I'd go with that to start the discussion.
Let's, before people tune away, because I see the arms reaching for the dials right away, there is a debate tonight. It starts right after our show. Thank you. Thank you for scheduling it after the show. We were quite emphatic about not conflicting. Lee Zeldin will be debating Governor Kathy Hochul. Yes, finally, this is happening. We all wanted it to happen. Now, Lee's been throwing a temper tantrum, saying he wanted more debates. It's unfair. There's only one debate. Yeah, it may be so. I'd like more debates myself. I would, but it's not uncommon. I mean, come on, Florida, one debate. Pennsylvania, one debate. It seems to be more the norm than the exception. And to prove his point, Lee Zeldin said he wasn't going to participate in the debate because it wasn't exactly what he wanted. That's how childish we're dealing with. So eventually, we were able to convince him, you know, and get him to show up for this debate. That starts at 7 o'clock. I think it's a 1-hour debate with the governor of New York, and that is where he'll get to blame her for everything. Now, I'm going to get back to the mass scores in a second, but I just want to focus on crime for a second. Because once again, and you're going to see this tonight or hear this tonight, depending on how you hear or witness a debate. Basically, every single crime that takes place in New York State will be the fault of Kathy Hochul, whether it's crime in New York City, whether it's crime in upstate New York, crime anywhere. He is going to point the finger and say, Kathy Hochul, it's your fault. What did you do about this? What are you going to do about this? And when you look at any other place in the country, and I'm focusing on Florida because, well, we all know that's where Lee Zeldin's going to wind up, in Florida, as a commentator for Fox News. We all know this. Any crime takes place in, say, Miami. Is that the fault of Governor DeSantis? No, of course not. Never even brought up, never even mentioned. Why is that? Why do Democrats let these people get away with this time and time again? Every crime in New York, the fault of the Democratic governor. Every crime in Florida, not the fault of the Republican governor. And let me just point out, Miami has a much higher crime rate than New York City. Yeah, he would never know that from the media coverage, but it's true. Look up the statistics. They're very easy to find. They're everywhere. And more violent crime, more gun crime. And it's not anything new. So I just hope when this is brought up in about an hour, as it inevitably will be brought up, that, you know, she's able to fire back and say, you willing to say the same thing about one of your pals down there or other states, too? Look at all different states run by Republicans that have higher crime rates than New York. But instead, Democrats just let this happen time and time and time again, where they get blamed for things that are not their fault. COVID, for instance. How is COVID somehow the fault of the Democrats? They didn't invent the pandemic. They didn't make it up. It was real. We lost over 1 million people in our country. Much more throughout the world. This was a real thing. It was horrible. We all went through it together. But when you look at the summation of it now, and even this is coming from people left of the spectrum too, somehow Democrats are the ones who messed everything up. Are we forgetting how Trump dealt with it when this first happened, trying to cover it up, trying to minimize it, not responding nearly fast enough? Untold numbers of people died as a result of that. Where's the blame? Where's the finger pointing on that? No, it all goes back to Democrats every single time. And now we're seeing a bunch of kids that can't add. And that's the Democrats' fault too, because they insisted that people take precautions and not simply say, I don't believe in the virus. And because of that, kids stayed home. It was a bad situation. Nobody wanted it, but it was the best that could be done under these terrible circumstances, which, let me remind you again, Democrats had nothing to do with. So now the scores come out and Democrats get the blame for COVID, for bad scores. But are Democrats throwing the blame for, say, homeschooling? Yeah, homeschooling is the latest big fad for all these parents that are freaking out over critical race theory in the classroom and all kinds of other fiction that they've made up and managed to convince themselves that this is a reality, that their kids are being taught how to change their sex in school and basically tear down the United States and feel bad for being white and all kinds of nonsense that is simply not true, but they're managing to amplify it. And again, Democrats aren't fighting back nearly enough. Homeschooling basically is guaranteeing that kids are not going to learn certain things. They're not going to learn history. They're going to get a very distorted view of this country. A religion is going to be inflicted upon them in ways you can't even imagine. And math scores are going to suffer. So instead, the fingers are being pointed at Democrats. Somehow it's their fault that the math scores are down. Democrats aren't saying, how about homeschooling? How about we take a look at what you're doing to the kids? And the average parent really can't teach math all that well. Maybe they can teach reading. Maybe they can, you know, direct a kid to a book or something like that. But math, would you go to your parents to learn math? No, I don't think so. That is a big deal. Haven't heard a peep about this. Democrats, you got to get your act together. You got to fight back. You got to defend yourselves. I can give you some pointers, but I can't do it all. It's so frustrating, Kyle. It really is.
Yeah, and entirely not your fault, you know, of course.
Thank you.
It's so crucial that you help people understand all the ways they can, you know, participate and refute the continuous lies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's what they are. They are lies, but they take, you know, there's something that resonates. This whole crime thing. How is crime a Democratic issue over Republicans? You know, you have a situation where people have easy access to guns. Are Democrats doing that? No, of course not. They're moving in the opposite direction. But yet, when there are crimes with guns, again, fingers pointed at Democrats. You know, and not enough is being done to point the finger in the other direction. I want to read you an editorial. You aware there was a mass shooting yesterday in a high school? Because no one's talking about it.
I don't know. I think there were two.
Oh, I might have missed one, but
there was one.
There was one in St. Louis. St. Louis, there was one.
Uh huh. And whose fault is this again?
It depends who you listen to, obviously. Okay. So, how about we listen to, you know what? I printed this out, and it didn't print the name of the newspaper. Hang on. No, wait. I've got the wrong thing. Oh, here we go. The Kansas City Star. There it is. Yeah, they had this headline in their editorial. Mourn St. Louis school shooting victims. Condemn lawmakers behind Missouri's gun laws. That's what I'm talking about. A teacher and a student died following a shooting Monday at a high school in St. Louis. Several others were injured. Alexandria Bell, a sophomore, was on the school dance team. The teacher, 61-year-old Jean Kutska, appears to have put her body between the killer and students. The suspected shooter was killed by St. Louis police. We mourn the loss of life and offer condolences to the families and friends of the victims. We join with all Americans in condemning yet another act of gun violence in a school. The facility, Central Visual and Performing Arts High School, appears to have been hardened against an attack, yet it happened anyway. And they had, I believe, seven security guards in the school. They might have all been armed, too, for all I know. When I went to school, we had none. We had no security guards. There was no need for this kind of thing. Same country. Same damn country. They had seven. Couldn't prevent this. The White House called the attack senseless, and it was certainly that. In Missouri, though, senseless shootings in a high school, in a parking lot, at a weekend fair, are entirely predictable. Its lawmakers have pursued reckless, senseless gun legislation for years. The state's General Assembly and its governor have created the violent world in which all Missourians live. It was only a matter of time until something like this happened here, State Senator Carla May of St. Louis said Monday. To see the violence that is happening everywhere and to act like it wasn't going to come home, I don't know what to say about that. Consider, for example, the Second Amendment Preservation Act, passed in 2021 and now a part of Missouri law. All federal acts, laws, executive orders, administrative orders, rules, and regulations shall be invalid in this state, shall not be recognized by this state, shall be specifically rejected by this state, and shall not be enforced by this state. That is their law in Missouri. Basically, big middle finger to any other federal regulation. It's like they're inviting this kind of thing. Continuing, there's more. Under SAPA, which is the name of that crazy thing, Second Amendment Preservation Act, local officials are prohibited from assisting any federal official in enforcing federal gun laws. I'll say that again. Local officials are prohibited from assisting any federal official in enforcing federal gun laws. In the St. Louis case, that means local authorities risk a fine if they cooperate with the FBI or the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives in their investigation of the shooting. This could compromise the work in St. Louis. The shooter may have obtained his weapon illegally or without a background check, which is generally required under federal law. The seller or sellers could face federal criminal liability. If St. Louis police find such evidence, they may be precluded from sharing it with federal authorities. Yeah. Had they found such evidence before the shooting, let me repeat this. Had they found such evidence before the shooting, they risked a lawsuit if they shared it with the feds. It's dangerous and appalling. Local and federal authorities are permitted to work together to enforce Missouri's gun laws. We hope and expect they will do so in this case. Just to make that clear, to enforce Missouri's gun laws, local and federal authorities are permitted to work together. But Missouri forbids local authorities from working with federal authorities to enforce federal laws. It's insane. The broader point still remains. SAPA prevents full enforcement of laws designed to prevent tragedies like the one in St. Louis. Republican state lawmakers complain relentlessly and inaccurately about alleged defunding of police, yet they have taken proactive steps to hamstring enforcement of gun regulations. That's not only defunding the police, it's disarming them. That has to stop. The Justice Department has sued to stop Missouri from enforcing SAPA. This act impedes criminal law enforcement operations in Missouri, said U.S. Attorney General Merrick Garland. The United States will work to ensure that our state and local law enforcement partners are not penalized for doing their jobs to keep our community safe, he said. SAPA is clearly unconstitutional, and we expect the courts to say so. For now, it is also bad law. After Monday's shooting, several Missouri politicians, Attorney General Eric Schmidt, Governor Mike Parson, Senator Josh Hawley, expressed sorrow and remorse for the shooting. Teresa and I are praying for the victims, their families, and the entire community, Parson said in a tweet. Missourians should join Parson in that prayer. Then they should demand that he and others in the state stop making their gun fetish more important than protecting innocent life. I'm sorry, that's a kind of editorial you have to throw down on the ground just out of passion, because that really does drive home the point of how insane and crazy things are. So, you know, next time you hear that somehow Democrats are responsible for crime, you know, take a look at what's going on in the schools, in the streets, in Congress, with the inaction and the absurdity that Missouri can't even work with the feds to prevent gun violence. I mean, this is a special kind of crazy that we've arrived at.
But you're in a position where we have to talk to zombies, people who are indoctrinated and completely out of their minds.
Mm-hmm.
They are convinced that they are the only people that matter anymore, and that whatever is said from on high, or whatever any of them say to each other or convince themselves about, goes for some reason, as though no one else is around listening to it. And boy, reality's going to come quick.
When does a reality arrive? I've been waiting for reality for a while now. People keep voting these lunatics in, you know, and I don't know. I really can't say this strongly enough. This is the opportunity. 2022 is the opportunity for some kind of blue tsunami to restore sanity. And it doesn't have to mean that people who are on the red side are living in misery or losing out or anything like that. It just means restoration of basic, sane laws and ways of dealing with things. Because what I just read now, I'm sorry, that is insane. And I think you can be right wing and agree with that. You know, you can embrace guns as much as you want. But at some point you have to realize, wow, that's going too far. You know, this is kind of crazy. This is hurting everybody and it needs to stop. And if we don't do that, it just keeps getting worse and worse and worse. You know, we keep pointing to the Second Amendment and particularly lawmakers and people in courts. And what they fail to realize, what they fail to remember is that what we're talking about is not interpretation of the Second Amendment. We're talking about reinterpretation of the Second Amendment, because this country has been around for a while and we've always interpreted it in a particular way. And then about the time of Reagan, that started to change. And the basic, rather clumsy phrasing of the Second Amendment was reinterpreted to mean everybody can have whatever kind of gun they want and nobody can tell them they can't, you know? And that's never what it meant. That never was what it was about. Remember, when the Second Amendment was written, bullets hadn't even been invented yet. So you can't say the Founding Fathers meant for what we are doing now to be the reality. I'm sure they'd be the first ones to say this is completely wrong. And today's Republicans would be the first to condemn them for saying it.
Truly, the way it is written is wildly out of proportion. It's much more like what gun manufacturers are interested in than what people want. And I think it's an example, a perfect example of the ways that lobbying and the body politic has been co-opted by special interests and people that can just buy off all this stuff. So the people who aren't actively involved don't matter. It just goes right over them because those people aren't engaged and they're not putting up the money. And that's why I think why politics needs less money in it and stuff. And I don't know. We need sane conservatives and right wing people, but it not like this. And I mean, the idea that people with different ideas are trying to make what you stand for and your ideas not relevant or not allowed or just erase them. Yet that is what is coming from the current conservative tilt. And boy, you want to start threatening the other side of the aisle with that kind of rhetoric. I mean, they'll talk you down a little bit for a while, but it's untenable. And people are tired of it. There are other priorities. And this mania around knee-jerk reactionary politics and these fetishized weapons lobbies, it's not funny anymore.
It never was. It really never was. But you know, in 2 weeks people have the opportunity to actually make changes to voice their opinions. This is just one issue. There are many others. You mentioned sane Republicans. They exist, but you know what? They're afraid. Look what happened to Liz Cheney. You know, and everybody else who stands up against Trump, what is happening now is very, very unhealthy. You talk about cancel culture. That's your cancel culture right there. You speak out in any way against the leader and you don't exist anymore. You can't run for anything. You will lose. Your life will be ruined and destroyed. Or actually, I think your life will be improved if you're not with these people. But point is, it's something that is very, very unhealthy. And it's happened before. We just saw the Ken Burns documentary, The U.S. and the Holocaust. I so recommend that. Although PBS makes it rather hard to find. I think it's on Amazon or something, but whatever. If you can track it down, pirated copy, whatever you have to do, for God's sake, it's an important story. Everybody needs to see this. It needs to be in schools. I don't care what these right-wing parents are telling you about. We can't talk about these things. No, the United States had a very disturbing history throughout the Holocaust, throughout World War II, where just like today, people who tried to immigrate to this country, refugees, desperate people, they were turned away. There were quotas. There were all sorts of fear that was indoctrinated into people about these Eastern Europeans, these Jews that weren't like us. We don't need any more of them. We're full. It seems so damn familiar. The situation, yes, clearly was different. The mentality was the same. And I had never realized how bad that was. Now, this is a six and change hour documentary, so watch it in parts. But I think when you see this, you will be blown away by our history, by what we did wrong, what we haven't learned from that time. It really, I can't recommend it enough.
Yeah, the ingrained hatred was so well understood at the time that at every turn when there were government-sponsored programs and things to help people suffering from World War II and trying to migrate and stuff like that, there were other populations that were mixed in. There was all this very careful orchestrating to keep public sentiment from thinking that it is purely something that is just for the benefit of Jewish people, which itself really to me just is a glaring failing right there. And also just how late we intervened, and yet the way we talk and revere our involvement, it's as though we've solved this attitude yet. And today we're still suffering from a world rife with anti-Semitism and just careless comparisons and ignorance all over. So I think it's a cautionary story to maybe take a second look at how we've been and what's all around us and sort of repeating in so many different ways.
There was so much hatred, ignorance, fear in that period. And the thing is, I think you can see a similarity if you look at what people say today and what people were saying then. People thought they were doing the right thing. They thought they were protecting their communities. They thought they were protecting their ways of life. They didn't want this influx of people from a foreign land that didn't know their ways. And they were good with that. Even after realizing the massacres that were going on in Europe, they still were okay with limiting the number of people that would come into their country. And, you know, what I find really interesting about that, if you look throughout the bigger picture of history, you always have a particular group of people that's not welcome, whether it's Irish or whether it's Italians. And then they turn into the people that want to keep other people out. Then it was the Jews. And now it's people from Central America, or people who are Arab. You know, it's always somebody who threatens your way of life, always somebody that's new and different and perhaps desperate that you want to keep at arm's length. So our mentality really hasn't changed that much. Circumstances in the world certainly have changed, but this mentality is what is truly unhealthy and what leads to really, really bad outcomes, because people are victimized, taken advantage of. And this country is, it was founded as, hypocritically or not, as a place where people would have opportunity. And I think we owe it to at least that premise and to our future to have that open to as many people as possible. Something else, I thought after seeing this this documentary, again, the U.S. and the Holocaust, really incredible. And this might be controversial to say, but I think it is an important statement to make when dealing with Russia today, because what Russia is doing is unforgivable. crazy, reminiscent of all sorts of horrible things that have happened in history in the past. But I do think we should make this clear and say we could not have won World War II without Russia. The Nazis would have won had Russia not been there making tremendous sacrifices, which is why current actions from Russia are so painful to witness, because they have accomplished such incredible things in the past. And, you know, putting Stalin aside for a second, just the fact that they were there fighting the Nazis was what tipped the scale, in my opinion. I think, you know, saying that, just getting it out there that we don't think Russia is inherently an evil place for all time. You guys have done some incredible things and have really been there when it mattered. I think that makes the condemnation of current events all the stronger, all the more meaningful. And you can't just accuse the West of just always being anti-Russia or anti-Soviet as they were then. That's what I got from the film. I don't know, maybe others won't agree with that. But if you look at the footage, it certainly made a difference. Wow. Okay, so we're moving all over the spectrum tonight. The Times, New York Times, has, not surprisingly, endorsed Kathy Hochul. I'd like to read this editorial that appeared on the 22nd. The race for the governor of New York is unusually close this fall, and that disturbs me. That really does. You have a guy running right now who wants more guns on the street, who wants to outlaw abortion, who wants all kinds of horrible things, supports Trump in everything he does and says. How is the race close? You know, if he doesn't lose by at least 10 points, I will be upset in 2 weeks. Fair warning. Race for the governor of New York is unusually close this fall. That probably reflects the frustrations of many voters in the state. Like millions of other Americans, New Yorkers are living with sharply higher costs for housing, food, and fuel. Okay, let me just stop you right there, editorial. Okay, inflation, that's not on the Democrats either. Inflation is happening globally. Okay, there's all sorts of reasons for these fluctuations. Rising fuel, directly related to the Ukrainian invasion. Directly, the cutoff of fuel from Russia. I guess you could say Democrats took a stand and weren't about to let Russia take over all of Ukraine. So yeah, I guess on that level, it's their fault. Think about the alternative. Higher rates of crime. Okay, we've already been over that, how that's absolute nonsense. Not that there's higher rates of crime, but that you can pin that on Democrats. Insane. An unsteady economy and schools where teachers and students are struggling to overcome 2 years of learning loss. See, all of this is being pinned on the Democrats when absolutely none of it is directly related to their policies. A total of 71,623 people in New York have died of COVID as of October 21st. And the pandemic left many others ill, isolated, or angry at the failures at all levels of government to protect them and get the state moving again. Interesting they say the state. What about the nation? What about when Trump was in power? You know, that's where things really were terrible. New York actually didn't do so badly in comparison to a lot of other places. New York City's transit system has not regained its ridership, office towers are not full, and the financial system has taken longer to recover than in many places in the United States. Again, yeah, these things are terrible. But how is it because of Democrats? It's because of COVID. Again, not something Democrats created. Continuing, this is fertile ground for a candidate like Representative Lee Zeldin of Long Island, the Republican nominee for governor. He can easily be mistaken for the moderate that he likes to portray. Really? Who would easily mistake him for a moderate? Just another average New Yorker worried about jobs and safety, family and gas prices, someone who wants to shake up Albany and get things done. Not really. Not really. New York has a long, proud tradition of moderate, thoughtful Republicans, from George Pataki to Nelson Rockefeller. Mr. Zeldin is not part of this tradition. There we go. The Times is back. Thank you, Times. Over and over again, he has demonstrated a loyalty to Trumpism over his oath to defend American democracy and the Constitution. In his campaign for governor, he makes spurious arguments about crime and his public safety plan appears to be little more than returning to the zero tolerance policies that have no clear connection to improving safety. Ads from Mr. Zeldin's campaign use threatening images of black men to stoke panic, and one features a crime that took place in California. And the plans Mr. Zeldin has laid out during this campaign lack a serious interest in the work of governing at a time when the state needs strong, energetic leadership. Compare that with the record of Kathy Hochul, who has used her first year in office as governor to show that she can get things done to improve the lives of New Yorkers. Ms. Hochul has set aside political drama to make progress on the things that matter most to New Yorkers: health, safety, and access to good jobs and housing. For that work, she has our endorsement for a full term. New York Times. There's more, but I don't want to read the entire editorial. It just seems like common sense. You know, it seems like if you just look at facts and weigh things equally, that these conclusions aren't so hard to reach. You know, it's not a radical conclusion to say that this is the direction that we do need to be going.
Is she like a full incumbent or like a partial incumbent? I feel like people, I mean,
what's a partial incumbent?
Well, she took over. It wasn't a full term like you're talking about. So, I'm
and she wasn't actually elected.
If she's got any sort of advantage, just as people have experienced what her abilities are in the position so far, in sort of that partial capacity of just like a demo.
If
a
you
trial,
go back,
trial run.
If you listen to the shows where Cuomo was crashing and burning, I don't think we even knew how to pronounce her name. And I couldn't remember it, you know, and it took a while. Now it's in my mind fresh, and I think everybody in New York, because she's been there. She's, you know, been saying things and showing up, and
there has been pretty good messaging.
Yeah, and she's been clear about the rights of women for reproductive health, and her fighting back against crazy gun decisions from the Supreme Court. And she's a fighter. She's a fighter and somebody that we need at this particular time. And, I was worried. I really was. I wasn't sure if she would be up for the job because, you know, she wasn't elected. And I think in that time she has really stepped up, and I sure hope the people of New York recognize that.
Yeah. Like, do you see Lee Zeldin as responsive?
See, Lee Zeldin,
he doesn't even have debates, right?
No.
Town halls,
because he's deathly afraid of talking to his constituents.
Because people talk to him and like step.
But Lee Zeldin has been in power for 8 years now. Is 8 years? And, you know, so we have something to point to. Of course, he has been elected, but he's been elected by, I don't want to say bad things about the local area, but my God, I mean, if you just look at what people say around here, the signs that people put up, you know, the few Kathy Hochul signs I've seen up, and I hadn't seen any up until a couple of weeks ago, they've all been removed. They've all been yanked up.
They didn't last.
Zeldin signs are everywhere. This is a very racist part of New York. There is no question about that. And there is no lack of evidence. I love the people. I get along, but the conclusions that are reached, it's disturbing. And thank God that New York City exists, because I think that's why Kathy Hochul will win, because of that. I'm worried about what's going to happen out here in Suffolk County. You know, we have a great candidate in Bridget Fleming, who has served in the Suffolk County legislature and is running to replace Zeldin in his empty seat in Congress. But then you got this Lolota character who doesn't even live in the district, who is a pure Trumpian, basically, you know, another Lee Zeldin. And I'm worried that this county is just going to embrace that again.
MAGA clone.
It feels like we never learn, you know, and you have so many good candidates and they just get the back of people's hands, not considered because they're not Trumpian enough. I don't know how else to say it or at all. You know, if you question this guy and all of the, all the loyalty is basically, again, fear, ignorance, hostility to all sorts of things that might be a little bit different or might be moving in a direction. Well, you know, I'll tell you, we have to move in a direction. We have to progress. We can't regress. And every one of the Republican platforms that I hear involves regression, you know, involves going back to the way things used to be in schools, in the streets, you know, and basically hostility towards those who are different, whether they're transgender, whether they're Central American. And, you know, there's a whole lot of anti-Semitism as well that goes with that. You may not want to admit it. You may not want to believe it, but it doesn't take much to uncover it. Do you really think these fundamentalist Christians are Jewish people's friends? No, they're not. They're not. They may agree on the same things politically, and for their convenience, they may support each other, but you better believe when it comes time to actually take action in one way or another, they're not going to be hand in hand. Let's just put it that way. Just have to look at history. Okay, so north of the border, in Canada, something amazing happened in the last week. It became illegal to buy and sell handguns. Yeah, just like that. We're the ones with the mass shootings. They're the ones with the gun laws. I'm going to read a statement from the government, actually. Fewer guns means safer communities. Can we even say that in this country without being shouted down by right-wing people? I don't know if we can say that. I'm going to say it again. Fewer guns means safer communities. That's why the government of Canada is implementing some of the strongest gun control measures in a generation. Handguns are the weapon of choice in most firearm-related crimes, which is why limiting the number of handguns is a critical part of our plan to protect Canadians from gun violence. The Prime Minister, Justin Trudeau, today announced a national freeze on the sale, purchase, and transfer of handguns comes into effect. From now on, people cannot buy, sell, or transfer handguns within Canada, and they cannot bring newly acquired handguns into the country. Simple. Just like that. A national handgun freeze was first announced alongside Bill C-21, the strongest gun control measures in over 40 years, in May 2022. While the bill continues to be debated in Parliament, we are taking immediate action through regulations to keep Canadians safe. The national handgun freeze is part of the government's comprehensive plan to tackle gun violence. We have already banned over 1,500 types of assault-style firearms and have strengthened our gun control laws to expand background checks. Bill C-21 proposes further measures to keep guns out of the wrong hands, like revoking the firearms licenses of those involved in acts of domestic violence or criminal harassment, continuing to fight gun smuggling and trafficking, and providing law enforcement more tools to investigate firearms crimes. How is any of this controversial? Well, it's not up there. Have you heard any real complaints? I mean, I've heard some complaints from people in sparsely populated areas of the country. Okay, complain away, but this is what the people want. One life taken by gun violence is one too many. We will continue to work with provinces, territories, Indigenous communities, and municipalities to keep Canadians safe. We will continue to do whatever it takes to keep guns out of our communities and build a safer country for everyone. This is what Justin Trudeau said. Canadians have the right to feel safe in their homes, in their schools, and in their places of worship. With handgun violence increasing across Canada, it is our duty to take urgent action to remove those deadly weapons from our communities. Today, we're keeping more guns out of our communities and keeping our kids safe. Here's what the Honorable Marco E. L. Mendocino, the Minister of Public Safety, had to say. Our government is taking Canada's most significant action on gun violence in a generation. We made a commitment to Canadians that we would act, and we are. The national freeze will tackle the alarming role of handguns in crime, gender-based violence, and more. We are using all tools at our disposal to fight gun violence and will not rest until all Canadians feel safe in their communities. Let me ask you, is this a terrible place north of the border? You know, is this a non-democratic regime? Are people feeling like they're under occupation? No? Are they doing okay not being allowed to buy and sell and transfer handguns? I think they are. I think they are doing just fine. And I think we're the ones that feel like we're under occupation. Some quick facts here. Handguns were used in 59% of violent crime involving firearms between 2009 and 2020. There are 70% more handguns in Canada today than in 2010. There were over 3,500 reported thefts of firearms in 2018. One in three women and girls killed by an abuser is murdered with a gun. Applications submitted before October 21st, 2022 to buy, sell, or transfer a handgun within Canada will continue to be processed. Okay, I guess you have to. Limited exemptions to the national handgun freeze will apply. For example, high-performance sports shooting athletes and those who carry handguns as part of their lawful profession will be exempted, as well as authorized businesses such as gunsmiths, the film industry, or museums per their license conditions. All sounds relatively sane. The temporary ban on the importation of handguns into Canada that took effect on August 19th remains in place. Boy, it just seems so sane up there. And I'd like to see, you know, I do believe in our country, most people would have no problem with any of this. But getting that into representation, that's where it's tricky. You know, because there are all these power structures at play. You know, there's all these lobby interests that preclude you from having people who truly represent what you believe in. And that's, I guess, the way our system works. So in 2 weeks, this is something to consider. Or before 2 weeks. Kyle, you already voted.
Yes.
So it's done.
For me.
Yeah. And I guess I could vote too. I could vote early. I think if it hasn't started already, it's going to start very soon. I should know this, but I don't intend to vote early. But you can do that. You can vote early in different locations. Just look it up. Go to New York State. Just type in New York State voting regulations and you'll get to the right site. And they'll tell you, you can look up your registration, make sure you're registered. And you can vote early if you need to. The important thing is to vote, though. If you don't vote, you're letting somebody else make the decision for you. And as we've seen time and time again, when that happens, they tend to decide bad things. I saw a statistic someplace, and I just don't remember the source. It was a trusted source that basically if Democrats show up, and particularly if young people show up at the polls, Democrats have a good chance of prevailing. But if young people don't show up in high numbers, Republicans will edge them out. Because young people have more of an interest in things like reproductive rights and things like gun safety and things like social justice. So if they are inspired to show up, regardless of what part of the country or what part of the state they're in, it will make a huge difference. So if you know young people out there who've never voted before or were thinking of sitting this one out, help them change their mind. Help them find ways that they can participate, even if it's slightly inconvenient. There are all kinds of ways to make it more convenient. Like right now, you can vote early in Texas. Yeah. Imagine that. Although I'm hearing that, I don't know if it was Texas or some other part of the country, I think Arizona, where voter intimidation has already begun, where people in camouflage and weapons are standing around ballot boxes, early ballot boxes, and taking down license plates and taking pictures. This is unacceptable.
You can report that.
Yeah, you can report that. But my God, how does anybody think that is okay? You know, that should tell you right there, we're facing some pretty evil stuff.
Yeah, document anything like that. and safety in numbers, you know, tell people, tell as many organizations and media outlets. They're going to be watching for things that go on like this. And the more people that are engaged, that are helping others participate, the better off I think the whole process is. And yeah, we have to actually have these votes and get people in office who have a vested interest in passing legislation and doing the governing that needs to be done, whatever that may be, and however distinct their position might be. It's important to, like, you know, have it function. It has not been functioning, and I just wish, no matter what people vote for, that their intention is for the system to operate so that we can live our lives knowing that whatever government there is and whatever it is doing, it is it's not paralyzed as it's been.
Yeah, indeed. You ready for the debate? It starts in 6 minutes. We should tell people, if you want, first, there's two debates tonight. There's the John Fetterman, Mr. Oz. Is it Mr. Oz?
Dr. Oz. Dr. Oz,
I'm sorry. I'm in the Wizard of Oz. They're having a debate in about an hour, I think, at 8 o'clock, which is very convenient if you want to watch the Lee Zeldin, Kathy Hochul debate, which takes place in 5 minutes. That is being broadcast on New York One. Now, you might say, oh, this is terrible. I don't get New York One because I'm on Long Island. Well, I've got good news for you. If you have Optimum, if you have the cable channel, they actually pipe in New York One from Spectrum, a competing cable company. You go to channel 64, and you'll find New York One there, and they can start at 7 o'clock. However, let me point out, Finn is on at 7 o'clock, so keep the radio on, because that'll help keep you sane.
It's a good soundtrack for the debate.
I don't want to direct people away from the station. So 7 o'clock, Finn is coming on for 2 hours, and you always feel better listening to
jam-packed. Jam-packed with hits, always.
Well, I feel hits. Better. I wouldn't say hits, just knowledge and, you know, all kinds of vibes. So
indeed.
So that debate between Kathy Hochul and Lee Zeldin starts in just a few minutes. And then in an hour, you've got John Fetterman and the Man from Oz. And that'll go for a couple hours. Or it might just be 1 hour. I'm not sure. But that's on News Nation, if you can find that channel somewhere. All right. We are going to go out. Can you name a tube station, Kyle? Any tube station?
Oh, yeah. Bank.
Okay, Bank is a good one. Cock Fosters, that's my favorite. Somebody named Jay Foreman made a song that names every single London tube station. And there's a video on YouTube. You can watch the video. I'm not sure how well it translates onto radio, and this might be the first time it's ever been played on radio. But if you know a tube station in London, you're about to hear it. Write to us, otw@2600.com. We'll see you next week.
Bye, everybody.
Hornchurch, Ickenham, Hainault, Cockfosters, Ravenscourt Park, Bromley by Bow, Morden, Monument, Mornington, Crescent, Paddington, Plaistow, Pimlico, Dagenham, Heathway, Elephant and Castle, Richmond, Sloane Square, Beckham Tree, Brixton, Barbican, Chorleywood, Amersham, Eastcote, Alperton, East Finchley, Kenton, Kennington, Fairlop, Farringdon, Myland, Baronscourt, Maida Vale, Barking, Barkingside, Debden, Hammersmith, Vauxhall, Wembley Park, Tottenham, Hale, Northwood, Oakwood, Wood Green, Woodford, Colliers Wood, and then Croxley, Charing Cross, King's Cross, St Pancras, Brent Cross, Hatton Cross, Austerlee, Ballinborough, Chesham, Hampstead, Loughton, Leighton, Leightonstone, Stanmore, Snaresbrook, Greenford, Northolt, Northfield, Southfields, Marylebone, Kingsbury, Queensbury, Queensway, Queen's Park, Park Royal, Royal Oak, Burnt Oak, then Aldgate, Southgate, Highgate, Moorgate, Notting Hill Gate, St Paul's, Knees Den, Oxford Circus, Piccadilly Circus, Lambeth North and Northwick Park, Upton Park and Westbourne Park and Wimbledon Park and Stonebridge Park, Warwick Avenue, Waterloo, Watford, Walthamstow Central with Wanstead, Hounslow West and Hounslow East and East Ham, West Ham, West Hampstead, Putney Bridge, Knightsbridge, Redbridge, London Bridge, Uxbridge, Perivale, Leicester Square, Good Street, Baker Street, Bond Street, Warren Street, Liverpool Street, Edge, where?
West, Acton West, Harrow West, Finchley, Kew Gardens and Lancaster Gate and Garnersbury, Westminster, Upminster, Russell Square, Euston Square, Totteridge and Whetstone, East Putney, Ealing, Broadway, Fulham, Broadway, Tooting, Broadway, Arsenal, Stockwell, Chigwell, Seven Sisters, Black Horse Road, Blackfriars Temple, East Acton, Oval, Bow Road, Colindale, Archway, Angel, Upminster Bridge, Clapham Common, Clapham North and Clapham South and Swiss Cottage, Acton Town and Camden Town and Chalk Farm and West Kensington, Canning Town and Kentish Town and Sudbury Town and West Brompton, Faden, Boysen, Tooting, Beck and Stamford, Brook South Kensington, Rickman's Worth and Mansion, House and Marble, Larch South Wimbledon, Dollis Hill, Gansill, Grange Hill, Sudbury Hill, Tower Hill, Hillingdon, Aldgate East, Southwark High, Barnet, Earls Court, Bayswater, Pinner, Victoria, Mill Hill East, High Street, Kensington, Kensington, Olympia, Ealing, Common, Bermondsey, Heathrow Terminals 4 and 5 and Heathrow Terminals 1, 2, 3, Epping, Euston, Kilburn, Kilburn, Park, Chalfont and Latimer, Cannon Street and Cannons Park, Embankment, Canada Water, South Ealing, South Harrow, South Kenton, South Woodford, Canary Wharf, Harrow and Wealdstone, North Acton, North Ealing, North Greenwich, North Harrow, North Wembley and Highbury and Islington, Caledonian Road and Edgware Road and Finchley Road and Gloucester Road and Goldhawk Road and Holloway Road and Latimer Road and Preston Road, Elm Park, Regent's Park, Green Park, Holland Park, High Park Corner and Upney, Moor Park, Tufton Park, Chiswick Park, Newbury Park, Finsbury Park, Roding Valley, Hendon Central, Hounslow Central, Wembley Central, Belsize Park, Finchley Central, Covent Garden, Tottenham Court Road, Woodside Park, Wood Lane, Hanger Lane, Chancery Lane, Rangers Lane, Turpit Lane, Turner Green, Buckhurst Hill, Goddard Green, Kensal Green, Parsons Green, Stepney Green, Rosen Green, Bethel Green, Harrow on the Hill, Arnish Grove, Labrador Grove, Boston Manor, Manor House, St James Park and St John's Wood, Shepherd's Bush Market, Shepherd's Bush, Harston, Holborn, Northwood, Hill, Stratford, White City, Whitechapel, Willesden, Junction, Wimbledon, Ruislip, Ruislip Gardens, South Ruislip, West Ruislip, Ruislip Manor, Great Portland Street, Dagenham East, Bounds, Green, Bank.
Bank.